Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to Training and Tactics Talk here on Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews. I'm an editor here at Firehouse, and I would just like to thank you for joining us today. We have a great panel for an engine company roundtable. Today's panelists include Battalion Chief Tom Graber with the New York City Fire Department, Captain Jeff Johnson with the Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department, Lieutenant Larry Manasco with the Fort Worth Fire Department, and Captain Paul Urbano with the Anchorage, Alaska Fire Department. If we do these additional shows, please do feel free to send in questions for panelists and comments to podcasts@firehouse.com. We'll start off with a quick introduction from everybody. Chief Graber, can you tell us a little about yourself and your time with the fire department?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me on today. I appreciate it and looking forward to having a nice shop talk with the rest of the guys. I'm a battalion chief in the FDNY, over 21 years, over 5 years in rank as a battalion chief. I'm currently assigned to Battalion 15, the 15th Battalion in the Bronx. Throughout my career, I've worked in all areas of the city and all the boroughs. I also have worked in the safety battalion. I've participated in a couple of fatal fire investigations. I'm trained as a fatal fire investigator. I'm also trained and work in the Rescue Battalion and the Hazmat Battalion.
Okay. Captain Jeff Johnson from Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, thanks for inviting me on. And as Tom said, I look forward to the conversation today. I'm a captain with Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department. I'm going on 20 years in the fire service now. I was originally assigned to an engine company. Firefighter, then became a driver on an engine company, then was promoted captain to a ladder company, so that was a huge change for me. Made my way back into the Midtown area as a captain, floating a district, and now I currently drive as a safety officer, the battalion chief in 105, which is basically the east side of Midtown in Kansas City.
Okay, next up is Lieutenant Larry Manasco, who's also one of our contributing editors.
Yeah, my name's Larry Manasco, as Pete just said, and lieutenant with Fort Worth Fire Department. Coming up on 13 years, been a lieutenant for four now, and always worked on the east side, which is our busy side of town. I've always been on an engine company. Those tend to, in Fort Worth, that's who usually does the most work, so I don't really want to get on a truck company. And like Pete said, I'm contributing editor for Firehouse.com and just talk about company level training and just different aspects of that.
Okay, and Captain Paul Urbano from Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today to share some ideas as well as learn some ideas from you guys. I have 21 years in the fire service, 12 with the Anchorage Fire Department. I'm currently serving as a captain at Downtown Fire Station 1. I rotate from an engine to a truck. We have a few captains down here on each shift that we rotate through, as well as being on the hazmat team down here at Station 1. And I just like the opportunity to share ideas and learn ideas from other guys around the country.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, thank you. We'll break into the questions here, and we'll go through a bunch of them, take a break, and come back. The first question is, what is your engine company staffing for your department? You know, if it ranges, that's fine. You can kind of give us an idea about that. And what are the responsibilities, or do your company companies have seating assignments or task assignments? And we'll start off with Lieutenant Larry Manasco.
We run four on all of our engines and also on our trucks, so we're four across the board. Our engine company responsibilities, as far, we've had this discussion in the past, we don't have specific assignments, we don't have seating assignments. I have looked at that and kind of revised some of the things that we do as far as how we, my company, I'm not talking about citywide, just my company, how we perform RIT. We actually have that much more detailed now due to some discussions I've had about seating assignments. So, you know, we don't have specific assignments, but my guys know, you know, if we're first on at a fire, if the fire's on your side, you've got the nozzle. And then the next guy, the guy on the other side knows that he's going to help with the hose line, but he knows I'm behind the nozzle. So he knows he's going to be right outside the door humping hose until another company gets on, so that we've got two in, two out. And as soon as that next company gets on, then he comes inside. So, and our responsibilities at a fire can range. I mean, it depends what order people get on. I know, like, you know, up in New York, those guys get their entire alarm assignment on within, you know, just a couple of minutes. It may take us a good 5 minutes to get an alarm assignment on, and the last one on may be a truck company. So an engine company could be asked to do vertical ventilation, depending on the tools that they've got. So, like I said, our responsibilities are wide-ranging.
Okay. Captain Paul Urbano, what is your staffing and company responsibilities?
Our staffing is minimum is three, unless, of course, out of our, we have 13 stations and 14 engines, and out of our 14 engines, we have to, per our contract, we have to have at least five of them ALS. If we have more paramedics on duty, then we can have more than five ALS engines, and those engines are four-man engines. Our department also just pushed some people on BLS, on four-man BLS engines and four-man trucks out to the outlying stations, just like Larry was talking about. For two in, two out purposes, those outlying stations sometimes have a little bit of a delay for the next due companies to arrive. So we're trying to push four-man companies not only on our ALS engines around the city, but also on the outlying parts of the city, so they can have two in, two out.
Okay, Jeff Johnson from Kansas City.
All right. On our engine companies, staffing is minimum four. At times, we staff throughout the city with a fifth. If there's no vacancies for coverage, we've got the additional manpower. The responsibilities of the staffing that's made up is a company officer, a chauffeur, and two firefighters. And company officer's responsibility is, if they're first in, to make determination whether they're going to be an offensive or defensive attack. Obviously, the chauffeur is to get them there safely and as quickly as possible. And then the two firefighters. Firefighter riding behind the officer is the nozzleman, and the firefighter riding behind the chauffeur is a plugman if they do take in their own plug. And then the responsibilities are assigned by the company officer on EMS incidents. So that's the primary responsibilities of the four. If they have a fifth, then there'll be two men assigned to the nozzle with the company officer and a chauffeur and a firefighter for the plug.
Okay, and Battalion Chief Tom Graber, the staffing and responsibilities for New York City engine companies.
All right, the majority of the engines in New York City have an officer, a motor pump operator, which is the chauffeur, and three firefighters. We do have certain engines with four firefighters on the back step. Their main role is water supply and fire suppression. Because we have the luxury of having a number of truck companies in the areas where everybody is, we rarely use them for truck-specific duties. Their main tactic and main job is to stretch hose lines, supply water, and extinguish the fire.
Okay, thank you. The next question I have for everybody is commercial buildings and the hose lines that you prefer. We'll start off with Tom Graber. What do you, or what does your department do for commercial buildings? What kind of hose line do you stretch?
Well, commercial buildings, the first hose line we suggest is the 2.5-inch hose line. Our engine companies have basically three sizes of hose. We have an 1.75-inch hose line as an attack hose line. We have a 2.5-inch hose line as an attack hose line. And then we have a 3.5 hose line, which is basically used for supply, large caliber streams, tower ladders, things like that. So our first hose line for commercial occupancies should be a 2.5-inch hose line. Basically, the reasoning for that is there are a couple of very important considerations why we use the larger hose string for that. And in a commercial occupancy, most often we have an uncompartmentated area or larger areas as compared to residential areas where they're divided into rooms of smaller size. With the residential and the smaller compartmentation there, we use the speed and mobility most times of the 1¾-inch hose line. We have an acronym that we use for the use of the 2.5-inch line, and it's ADULTS, ADULTS. And we break it down as A, for an advanced fire on arrival, you would want to use a 2.5-inch hose line. If your hose line that you're stretching is for purely a defensive mode where you're really not going to be able to attack, it's a defensive measure, that would be a 2.5. If the fire area is undetermined, you're not sure how large it is, where it is, things like that, 2.5-inch. If you have a very large fire in a large uncompartmentated area, that would be the L for it. And T, we use tons of water, and that's if you need a very large volume of water to cool a superheated fire area. And then the S on adults, the last letter, would be we also use a 2.5 as our first line off of our standpipe system when we have high-rise multiple dwellings or commercial. We feel that the construction holds in the heat and the fire load requires the extra volume that the 2.5-inch hose line will put out.
Okay. Next up would be Jeff Johnson from Kansas City.
On the hose line for commercial buildings, if we arrive and have any type of smoke conditions that is pushing from the building, then the standard stretch would be a 2.5. Prior to 4 or 5 years ago, when we were operating primarily with three-man engine companies, the 1¾-inch was predominantly used just because of the smaller size, more readily for speed with the two guys, a company officer and a firefighter on it. And there were several times over a period of a few years it was noted that the 1¾-inch obviously wasn't going to flow enough water. And they had the 15/16 smoothbore nozzle on the tip for reach and flow and penetration, and it just wasn't enough. Now that the manning is at 4 minimum, sometimes 5, on a commercial building, the 2.5 would be the standard layout. And I know a lot of people look at that and think how difficult it is to move a 2.5. Yes, it is. Difficult. It weighs a lot. Getting it into the commercial structure, there's a lot of things that vary into it. But we just feel that you know, better be safe than sorry. And we think that the initial company officer arriving, whatever he does within the first 3 to 5 minutes, is going to set the tone for the next hour. And if he makes the right call with the hand line and uses it properly, then hopefully we'll be picking up soon. So, but 2.5 is primarily our main initial line on a commercial building.
Okay. Next up is Paul Urbano from Anchorage. What does your department call for commercial buildings?
Well, we've just kind of started to adopt this 2.5 line for commercial structures over the past couple years. Although, just kind of echoing what Jeff just said about, you know, it's tough for our three-man engines to be able to flake that line out and maneuver that once it's charged inside. Although I think more officers are bringing that line in, that size line in, when it's an advanced fire in a commercial structure because of the open spaces. And we have the option of using our fog nozzle, which is normally what we have on there, or we can bring an 1⅛-inch tip with us for a smoothbore application. But we're trying to get more to that 2.5-inch line, so you have the, you know, more GPMs for the bigger BTUs in those structures.
Okay. I'll finish up with Larry Manasco from Fort Worth.
On commercial buildings, really it just depends what we've got. You know, if you've got a small standalone convenience store with a, you know, say you got fire coming out a window, a minimum what we'll use is a 2-inch. But if that same convenience store is attached to a row of other stores, then just for the fact that they can get up an attic and run the entire building, we'll go with the 2.5. But really any fire in a commercial building of any substance, I mean, we've got the heavy smoke showing, don't know where to see the fire is, we use 2.5. But if it's something that, you know, is a little bit smaller that we think that we can handle, we'll use a 2-inch. One thing we won't do is we won't pull an inch and 3/4 into a commercial building, no matter the size.
Okay. All right, we'll be right back here on radio at firehouse.com. This is Training and Tactics Talk. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to Training Tactics Talk here on radio at firehouse.com. Today we have Battalion Chief Tom Graber with the New York City Fire Department, Captain Jeff Johnson with the Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department, Lieutenant Larry Manasco with the Fort Worth Fire Department, and Captain Paul Urbano with the Anchorage, Alaska Fire Department. Paul, the next question we'll start off with you, and it's based again on your department and what you prefer. Structure fires, do you enter with a charged line or a dry hose line? And what's the meaning or the reasoning for that?
Well, that kind of depends on the fire. You know, our bread and butter is single-family dwellings, and usually, you know, we kind of hit the IDLH area as soon as we make the entry in the first front door. And we usually take that line in charge right from the front door. But if it's a bigger structure, you know, we have tons of apartment buildings, 3- or 4-story apartment buildings around the city. And if we have to, you know, go up a couple stairs and a couple flights and down a hallway, we might wait and charge it as we get closer to the seat of the fire. So it kind of depends. There's no real standard. But if we can, you know, maneuver the hose uncharged, it's a little bit easier on us to kind of get it there, especially with a three-man engine. You know, it's a lot easier doing it that way.
Okay. Next up would be Jeff Johnson from Kansas City.
On this one here, I prefer myself a charged hose line, especially if I pull up and we have decent smoke showing. That's pushing out, that gives me the indication that it's a little more than just a content fire. And there may be some immediate search and rescue issues that need to be addressed or life hazards in there. I've had one time where we went in dry, smoke showing from a third floor of a 3-story single family wood frame, took the line in dry to the first floor, got up to the second floor landing, started flaking the hose line down the hallway, left it dry, called for water. Somewhere between the front door and the second stair or the second floor landing, the hose slid underneath a door and then become jammed. And it was valuable time that we lost shutting that line down, pulling it out from underneath the door, and then recharging it. That point there made me think about things that could go wrong. If you go into a structure with smoke and you're unsure where the fire is located at, you've got smoke all the way to the floor and the first floor, you know, your first thought would be potentially a basement fire. Any of those, if you go in dry, there's so many things that could potentially go wrong between the pump and your nozzle that would prevent you from getting water, that just would be create great difficulty for you and put you and your personnel in jeopardy. Having said that, as Paul was saying, you know, on 3-story apartment buildings and some of the bigger, you know, 4- or 5-story apartment buildings, going in dry, stretching dry, and just make sure you've got enough manpower to ensure that that hand line is clear all the way. You're at least one landing down from the primary floor that you're attacking. Make sure you've got water and it's all the air's blown off and plenty of manpower to advance that hand line, then I'm sure that works. I think that Like a lot of these things here, it really comes down to local solutions based on your manning and the type of structures and buildings and the fires you have. There's no one type situation, but there's a general concept that everybody, I think, operates on. We just got to tweak it to more local level, and this is kind of one of those. So, and that's what we do.
Okay. With the incident where the door caught the hose line, do you normally chalk as you go down the hallway to keep doors from closing on the hose line? Or?
We typically make sure the doors are closed. As far as the front door, we have a rescue that's assigned with our company. We have most of our engine houses are two company, so they're together. Somebody's either chalking or just taking the door off the frame, depending on who's doing it, whether it's a rescue or a truck. You can tell by going into the structure when the doors are laying on the floor, it was the truck. If they're chalked, it was the rescue. In this particular case, what it was a back swinging, right-hand closet door that was shut as we went by, and by turning to the left and going up the stairs, pulled the door on it. So it just wasn't closed all the way, apparently. But, yeah, typically we try and chalk the doors open or make sure they're firmly closed.
Okay. All right, Larry Manesco, you're up next.
Yeah, I agree with what both the captains have said. I think the only thing I'd add to that is stretching a dry line upstairs. I'm a lot more comfortable doing that if it's an exterior. Matter of fact, that would be what I would do if it was exterior stairs. Interior stairs, I know it's going up 3 or 4 flights of stairs with a charge line is nothing but a headache, but I'm a lot more comfortable with that headache than I am going with a dry line and having something happened or have something to happen inside enclosed in a structure. So if it's exterior, dry line. Anything on the interior, just for safety, I'm pretty much going to have a charge line with me.
Okay. We'll finish up this question with Battalion Chief Tom Graber.
Yeah, Pete, well, in our area in New York City and where I am in the Bronx, we have such a diverse buildings that we can't just have a set and dry rule whether to charge it outside the building. Or we have large multiple dwellings that are hand stretch, 6 stories. Some are built on an incline, and the building code where they actually turn into 8 stories. Those type of things, obviously, we're going to stretch it dry, and we try to get it to right outside the fire area, which would probably be the apartment door, if we have control of the apartment door. Other type of buildings, I know Larry in Texas, I believe he said he has predominantly wood frame single family structures that are detached. And we have those in our area also. Depending on where the fire is, the volume of the fire, we will either charge it at the front door, again, outside the fire area, or bring it in and try to get it a little closer.
Okay. I'm going to backpedal here a little bit. As far as the high-rises, a couple of people have mentioned that, and the standpipes, Tommy brought that up earlier with the 2.5s. What is your department policies for hooking up if you do have a high-rise response? Some departments say to hook up on the floor and then stretch up and kind of use gravity as a force to keep the water flowing. Some departments I know hook up on the floor below the fire. Larry, let's start off with Fort Worth. What do you guys do for high-rise and hooking up to the standpipe system?
Okay, yeah. It's funny you ask this because just yesterday we did a high-rise drill, and they made sure that they had companies that typically don't have high-rises in their territory. So we hook up floor below and stretch up.
Okay. Jeff Johnson?
Yeah, we do the same. We hook up the floor below and then stretch up. And then if there's going to be a second line to back up, they can either come from the floor below that or the floor above, depending on the smoke condition and the amount of fire and advancement they're getting on that primary attack force. So I'd say the four below as well.
Okay, Tom Graber, New York City Fire Department.
New York City, we are floor below.
Okay.
At one point, we did. There were certain units, or it wasn't clearly defined what to do as far as it was up to the captain's preference. But unfortunately, we've learned with wind-driven fires and with tragic consequences that we hook up on the floor below, and we do try to keep everybody out of the stairway that we are using. The hose line from, we call the attack stairway, out of that because of the potential for losing the hallway and, like I said, high volume intensity fires with wind-driven fires. So mandatory floor below. Sometimes we do have an exterior landing or an exterior type of walkway where that would be different. But most all our high-rise fireproof buildings is the floor below.
Okay, and Paul Urbano.
Yeah, we pretty much do the same. We hook up the floor below and then make the stretch up. I'd be curious to know from the panel what size hose line and what nozzle selection you guys are using.
Tom Graber here. As I mentioned before, we the lines off of standpipe, we use 2.5 with a smooth bore, no fog tip. We've had a number of just these high intense fires, and we really need that the volume of water and the gallons per minute. And we have had wind-driven fires where we couldn't even make the hallway with two 2.5s pushing down. That's how intense it was. Basically, we're trying to preserve the hallway in those situations until the contents actually reduces itself to decrease the BTUs enough for us to cool it down with what we have.
This is Jeff Johnson in Kansas City. We are using 2.5 with smoothbore as well. We hook up a gauge, pressure gauge at the standpipe connection, so that helps assist the amount of pressure on the line. But we are, it's bundled in one 100-foot section and then two 50-foot sections, and they can be broken apart depending on the size of the floor that they're making. But the 2.5 is what we just recently, I'd say within the last year, have gone to as a mandatory. We removed all high-rise packs off our companies that were 1 3/4 with the smooth bore, and it met mild resistance from a lot of older company officers who've had what they considered decent luck with 1 3/4 smooth bore. But we've just decided that with the amount of potential fire volume and the materials putting off a lot more BTUs now than in the 50s and the 60s, that the 2.5 was a way for us to go. So we've switched everybody over to that as well.
Okay. All right, guys, thank you. The next question, we'll move on to incident, if you're the first to engine company, you know, maybe something else is going on, or you're in one of those companies that's positioned a little bit outside the area where companies are following in rather quickly. If you have reports of people trapped inside of a home, you're the first due engine a couple minutes before the next due engine is there, and you know, based upon your staffing, do you stretch the hose line and perform search and or ventilation off the hose line, or do you split it up with you know, one person taking a hose line, one person doing search and rescue, or what do you guys do? And Larry, we'll start off with you on this one.
Okay, we don't have a set, you know, SOP that tells us how to deal with this. I guess I know I've caused a little bit of controversy in the past on this. We had a fire that when we were pulling up, dispatch is telling us that not only was somebody inside, they said they were actually talking to someone, and I had them repeat it. And I said, no, we, you know, we had this person on the line, and half of this residence is on fire. And then they came right back right before we make entry and say, we just lost contact with them. Well, I had my two guys go in, my two firefighters, they went to the left to simply control the fire, and I went to the right where I was pretty sure the bedrooms were located and started a search. Well, wound up nobody was even in there. I don't know how that all worked out. My chief went back and listened to the tapes, and he said, no, it sounds like somebody's in there, so I don't know what was going on. But in a case like that, I don't have a problem splitting up the crew. One thing I'm not going to do, I'm not going to leave one person on a hose line. I'm going to leave two people, since they're actually going to be closest to the fire. I'm going to leave two people. But it, once again, it does depend on who's on my crew that day. If I've got my regular guys, I have no problem splitting up. If I've got two of my guys on vacation and I've got two rookies on the back filling in, or an overtime guy that I really don't know, I'm gonna be a lot more hesitant about splitting up the crew, just because I don't know their capabilities, and I don't want to split a crew and me be the one in there searching, and these guys get overrun with fire and hightail it out, and then I'm kind of left on my own. So I don't have a problem splitting up a crew as long as it's my normal crew, just because I have faith. If it's a situation where the fire is just too intense that there doesn't need to be anybody in there without a hose line nearby, then we're at that point we're going to fight the fire and try to protect whoever might be trapped in there as best possible until we either get it under control and can split off, or until the next company gets there. So, like I said, there may be a lot of people that disagree with that, but I don't mind taking the risk splitting a crew up if I think there's somebody, if I've got good information or what I believe is good information that someone's trapped and I think that I can get to them. I don't mind the risk, because, once again, I think that's what we signed up for. That's an oath that we take to make the risk that at times like that. And I think there's way too many people out there that I understand line of duty deaths, and I know we need to do everything we can. But there's just sometimes that, like I said, there may be a lot of people disagree. Sometimes line of duty deaths are acceptable when we're trying to save people's lives where we have a good shot of getting them. I can live with that. If it's me that goes, I would hope that my family would be good with that decision.
Okay. Jeff Johnson from Kansas City.
Our primary objective once you arrive is to get water on the fire and allow the company that's coming in with them, whether it's a rescue or truck, to perform the search and rescue. That's the normal procedure. If you're a company that arrives and as you're stating, there's a little time period before another company comes in and you believe there may be a life hazard, I agree with Larry. I think that you've got to get water on that fire at least to protect at a minimum the stairwell to the second or third floor or to the bedrooms, to the hallway. You've got to protect that and at least give a chance for someone to get back there and do a rapid search. It's not going to be a very thorough search, but get in, try and get to the seat of the fire, or at least hold it in check and allow for that rapid assessment of a search. And as additional companies come in, continue on with extinguishment and assign companies to complete the primary search, and then assign another company to complete a good secondary search. But I'm of the opinion that if you get in the doorway, you find a fairly large volume of fire to your left in a living room, dining room area, and you can hold that in check, get it knocked down, and send somebody, hopefully if we're riding five that night, send two guys upstairs to check for victims, and they find somebody, and we get them out, and the house goes to the ground, and everybody's okay, I'm all right with that. I can live with that. I think it's harder to live with knowing that there may be somebody in there and you're on your own for a little while and you're primarily just flowing water or trying to hunt down the fire. So I think the life hazard is the primary objective, but trying to do it as safe as possible, protecting that means of egress, the stairwells or the hallway, to at least get a chance to get in and look and get back out.
Okay, next up would be Tom Graber, New York City Fire Department.
Yeah, I concur with Larry and Jeff. I would not have a first do engine company exclusively just do search and ventilation. We would have them stretch a line, protect the stairs or the means of egress. If the officer can split off and get a search in of a room or a bedroom, absolutely. But I wouldn't take them exclusively out of their primary duty of stretching the hose line and just have them do search and ventilation. If the situation was where somebody was at a window that was accessible by a ladder in the front, possibly we might, while stretching a hose line, peel somebody off and try to get a portable up there to get them. But in conjunction with stretching the hose line, we'd take somebody off and see if they could do that, fulfill that obligation in the front. But I agree with Larry and Jeff. Get the hose line there, and if you have to peel off and leave two guys on the line to either contain and protect that stairway, that means of egress that you want to get out and get that search in, absolutely.
Okay, and we'll finish up with Paul Urbano from Anchorage.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of these guys, what they were saying. The situation is going to dictate, you know, how far away are the second and third due engines and trucks. You know, I mean, are they right on my tail, or are they a ways out? You know, where's the fire? Where are the victims possibly? Do I have a three-man engine or a four-man engine? How well can I do these multiple functions? A lot of times for us, I find that if we just put the fire out, you know, a lot of our problems go away. You know, I've been in a couple situations where there's someone trapped, and I'm the first one in, and the next company is a little ways out, and we found a victim and pulled them out on our own. We took the line with us. We had a stretch of line, so it slowed us down a little bit. Or other times where I might have, if I had a four-man engine, which means me and two firefighters on the line, I might left one guy on the line to kind of protect our egress while the other two go try to find the victim. Kind of the opposite of what Larry said. He'd rather leave two on the line and go search by himself. But I think I'm kind of getting away from leaving one person by themselves, whether it's me by myself or those guys by themselves. So if I'm going to have to do a search, I'd probably take a line with me, you know, try to do that. But, you know, I don't want to, you know, get our egress cut off. So that's something I got to think about. But the situation is going to dictate, and, you know, a lot of times we put the fire out, maybe some of our problems will go away.
Okay. Today's final question here on Training and Tactics Talk would be water source. In your department, who is responsible for picking up a water source? Well, I guess everybody would have a hydrant water source for the most part. Is it each engine company or the first two engine company, or how does that go? And we'll start off with Tom Graber from New York.
In New York City, obviously, we have a hydrant source, which is reliable. We do hydrant inspection to try to increase the reliability of that. All engines are supposed to get on a working operating hydrant. First duel will get on a hydrant, second duel will get on a hydrant. We don't want to put all our eggs in one basket and just assume that the first hydrant or the first engine is on a hydrant. Sometimes we have situations where they're unable to get on a hydrant, or the hydrant is defective or inoperable. So we try to get all our engines on a hydrant. We try to stretch off the first due engine, which is on the hydrant, and if we have a situation that calls for multiple lines, we try not to get all our lines off of one engine. Again, the all the eggs in one basket thing. If the engine happens to be defective or go down on us, then we're not losing all the water supply. So we like to get everybody on an operating hydrant hooked up, and if need be, we'll use them.
Okay. Paul Urbano, you're next.
Normally, our second engine lays a line, and just a few years back, we went to a 5-inch supply line. In the past, our city just had two engines with 5-inch, and now all the engines have it. but it's our basic standard, although it isn't written, but the second due engine is the supply engine, unless, of course, the first engine happens to spot right on a hydrant in front of the structure there.
Okay. Jeff Johnson from Kansas City.
In Kansas City, first due engine is to bring their own water supply. Basically, the rule of thumb is don't pass up a plug. You can, if you don't come across one as you're pulling up to the building and you're giving your initial size up, you have to advise the second end company you don't have a plug in the direction you came from. The second company then, if they're coming towards you, they'll lay into you. If they're coming from behind, they'll reverse out. And then typically the third engine will grab a water supply as well, whether it be staging on the plug or going ahead and laying in and having that third engine set up as a attack pumper, whether it's backup or into the structure as a primary attack line as well, and have its own water supply. The main, it's not hard and fast, that's kind of the general rule, is just don't pass up a plug. If you're first in, you've got something showing, take a plug. If you, for any reason, do not, you've got to let the other companies know immediately that you need a water supply in. And the one thing I think that could dictate that from here would be if you're pulling up and you've got a well-advanced fire with some type of immediate life hazard, then the company officer may decide to go ahead and come on into the in front of the structure, actually just stop short of or pull past the structure and leave room for the truck and take care of that immediate life hazard, but they've got to advise other companies whether they have a plug or do not. So that's kind of the rule of thumb that we operate on here.
Okay. All right, great. Larry Manesco will finish up with you, and who is responsible for securing a water supply?
Generally, the second engine. Our first ons will typically, I'd say 99% of the time, they're going to operate off tank water. And once again, in the size up, if they think they need a supply line, then they'll go ahead for the next company in to lay a supply line. And when I say the next company in, first truck company always comes right into the fire. They don't usually lay supply lines. I don't even know if they know how to lay supply lines. But they will, second on engine will do it. Now, like I said, once again, over where I work, we do it a little bit differently than the rest of the city in that the second in engine company will come in and assume command. And if the first on company has already called for a supply line, then we'll go ahead and grab the plug and lay in or do a reverse lay, whichever is needed. A lot of times, if I'm first on, I'll call for the second on company to come in and just give me their tank water because, you know, like we said earlier, most of what we have is one-story wood frames. We do have quite a few two stories also, but most of the fires we have can be taken care of with two tanks of water. If I think we need more, then once again, if I or whoever it is that's first on, they'll call for a supply line. Now, just yesterday, we had a fire, and I actually heard we run trucks and quints, and I actually heard a quint company for the first time in a long time actually laying a supply line. So it can happen, but like I said, 99% of the time, it's going to be that second engine company. And all of our companies, with the exception of the first on truck, and over where I'm working, the first on and second on engine, they all go to the scene. Everybody else stages until they're called in. But it's known that when you stage, you always stage at a plug. So we generally have plugs from two to three different directions covered, just in case one doesn't work.
Okay. And Larry, a majority of the engines in Fort Worth are, what, 750-gallon tanks?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And then you also have one of the CAFS engines, too, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and how have you found that to work out so far? You've had that for over a year now, I guess.
Yeah, we've actually a couple of years now. We were the very first engine company to get a CAFS truck in our city, and I think they're going to where We've got 41 stations. I think they're wanting to have 15 engines that are calves. That way they can have one calves on every alarm assignment that's dispatched. You know, we heard all the, we had the people come in and give us a big spill on how great the calves were. I mean, they pretty much made it sound like a magic bullet. I really enjoy the calves. I really do. It's got a lot of benefits. One thing I don't agree with what they said, calves will not put out fire better than water. It doesn't put it out worse than water. I think they're equal. But with those two things being equal, calves, what elevates it above just using water to me is that it will make the hose lines twice as light. And, I mean, literally twice as light. It's amazing to feel the difference. Your two and a halves will feel like an inch and three-quarter. Your inch and three-quarter feels like you're, you know, pulling some little booster line around. And there's no steam conversion. You know, they always teach not to throw water at smoke. And we've had several occasions where we've gotten in and just, you know, it's a, like I said, it's a just nasty, nasty black chocolate brown smoke. You're afraid that it's going to light off and it's, you know, it's beating you to the ground. We have no problem opening up the nozzle because we don't get steamed. There's just no steam conversion. So we like it. Now, like I said, you can ask some of the companies around us that don't have calves, and they'll probably tell you they think it's a load of crap. But we actually are the ones that use it, and we go into the structures with it. We really like it. Now, it is more, the pump system is more difficult. Like I said, I don't care what the reps want to tell you. It is more difficult to operate than your typical pump. There are more steps and, therefore, more things that go wrong. But it's like with anything. Once you get used to it, it's second nature. So my company, we were, all three shifts were real good before we got it about probably, well, we went through all the training that we were supposed to, but then about 2 or 3 weeks before, we were actually going down to the shop as they were getting it ready to come out. You know, they're putting all the fittings on and getting everything set up for our tool mounts and exactly what we wanted. We went down every shift 2 or 3 weeks before, and we were out there for 2 or 3 hours flowing water, just playing with it, practicing with it, and the different things. I really like it. It's worked out really well. It seems to have held up pretty good. So, like I said, but it will not put out fire any better than what water, which is kind of what we were told. You know, they showed us a pretty video of a ton of fire, and they're squirting calves in there, and it just seems to just go out so great. Like I said, it doesn't quite. I haven't seen it work that way, and we've used it a bunch. But like I said, it's just as good as water, but it's got other benefits that kind of elevates it up over water, I think.
Okay, and what size supply lines do you use in Fort Worth?
We use 4-inch.
4-inch, okay.
Yeah, we all carry Humat valves.
Okay. We'll just finish up with that real quick as we go through finishing up this engine company roundtable. Tom Graber, New York City Fire Department, what size tanks do you have on the engines, and what size supply lines do you carry?
Well, supply lines, as I mentioned before, the engines carry 3.5 for supply lines. Hookup, we have a 50-foot, 5-inch hose for hooking up to the hydrant. But for supplying tower ladders and possibly relaying water or inlining water to a pumper that is not on a sufficient water supply, we use 3.5.
Okay. And all the engines have 500-gallon tanks, is that correct?
Oh, yes, 500-gallon booster tanks.
Okay. Paul Urbano, Anchorage supply line, what diameter, and then what do you have on the tanks?
We just went a few years ago to 5-inch supply line, the stores with stores connections on all our engines. And in the past, we had, you know, 2 water supply engines. Now all engines can do a large diameter water supply. And then most of our engines are 750-gallon booster tanks. Some of the outlying engines have 1,000-gallon tanks, and you know some of those also have a water tender housed with them. And we do have quite a few calves engines in the department lately. You know, all the new engines are coming in with calves also.
Okay, and Jeff Johnson in Kansas City.
In Kansas City, all of our engine companies have 500-gallon booster tanks, and we have 4-inch supply hose with the Storz fittings. And we do have All we have now on the rear is, like I said, we carry, each engine company carries 500 feet of 4-inch, and then I believe right around 1,000 of 2.5, which they've got divided. 250 is a pre-connected 2.5, and then the rest of it is just in the bed in a flat load.
Okay. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us here today. Again, we had Battalion Chief Tom Graber from the New York City Fire Department, Captain Chuck Johnson from Kansas City, Missouri, Lieutenant Larry Manasco with Fort Worth Fire Department, and Captain Paul Urbano from Anchorage, Alaska. This is Training and Tactics Talk on radio at firehouse.com, and we look forward to seeing you all again real soon. Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.